Good evening, everyone. It's wonderful to be with you. If you're visiting, welcome. If you're a member, welcome back. If you're in the parking lot, we hate you can't be inside with us, but we're glad that you're here with us. If you're listening online, thank you for tuning in. I think I covered all my bases there. So tomorrow is my favorite holiday of the year. I know some of you love Christmas more, and I understand that, but for me, it's Thanksgiving. I love Thanksgiving, but I got to tell you, I'm a little bit disappointed this year. I have some family we always spend time with on Thanksgiving, and because of contact tracing, they're not going to be able to be with us tomorrow. So I'm a little disappointed about that. That's kind of 2020, isn't it? I know we've had some highlights, and we've had some people get married, and we've had some people have their first child, and we've had some highlights in 2020, but I think as mankind looks back over 2020 in history, what we'll remember is what? Shelter in place and safer at home and maintain social distancing, right? That's kind of going to be the theme of this year. Well, I thought this might be an idea that we would talk about tonight, the idea of being socially distant, isolated, separated, solitude, alone. Well, we're going to start in Genesis chapter 2 tonight, and while you're finding Genesis chapter 2, I'm going to give you a very brief recap of Genesis chapter 1. Here it is. God created everything. That's Genesis chapter 1 in a nutshell. Now, we know from Genesis chapter 1 in verse 12, God saw that it was good. And in verse 18, it was good. And in verse 25, and it was good. And in verse 31, he says, it was very good. Do you remember the first problem, the first thing that God said is not good? It wasn't sin in Genesis chapter 3. It's actually in Genesis chapter 2 and now verse 18 where God says, it is not good for man to be alone. It's not good for man to be alone. Before sin, before death, decay, disease, any of that stuff comes into the world, the first problem that man has is solitude. He's by himself. And God says, this is not good. It's not good. In fact, if we look at, you know, history, solitary confinement has been used as a punishment for prisoners, people in jail and prisons, for prisoners of war, POWs, who are captured, even for school kids, right? You ever remember that kid in class that the teacher said, go sit in the corner. Take your desk and go outside. Or you're going to have to be in in-school suspension or something like that. You remember that kid in class? Some of you went to school with me and remember I was that kid in class. Have to be away from everybody else because evidently I was a problem. It was a punishment. You have to be by yourself. We have to separate you from everybody. That's a punishment. Why is it that so many people who retire go back to work? Is it just money? You know, this is one of the things Matt and I often come across when we're working for people. I talk to them about what do they do, and they say, well, I retired 4 years ago from this, doing such and such, and now I do this job. And sometimes they say, I do this job and that job. And we worked for a guy not too long ago, and he had 3 part-time jobs. Why? Did he need the money? Or was it because he was used to a social interaction 40 hours a week, and now he doesn't have it anymore? And so he goes back to work. We need that. Why are there so many senior centers? Why are there rec leagues, travel groups? I know a lot of people who retire and join these travel groups where you go around to different places, get on a bus, meet new people. Why do those things exist? Because we're social creatures, right? And we enjoy that kind of thing. Now, I understand we want to go along with our government and these government mandates. Romans 13 and verse 2 says, whoever resists authority, talking about government authority, has opposed the ordinance of God. But don't these government mandates kind of feel like forced loneliness? I know it does for some people. Is it a problem? We all need companionship. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, starting in verse 9, 2 are better than 1 because they have a good return for their labor. For if either of them falls, the one will lift up his companion. But woe to the one who falls when there is not another to lift him up. Furthermore, if 2 lie down together, they keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? It says, hey, we need companionship, right? Isn't that basically what he's saying here? Don't we even see this in infants? I remember when both of my kids were young, you feed them, get them good and full when it's bedtime, and change them, and get them in warm clothes, and put them in their blanket, and put them in the bed, and they still start crying. Why? You just go pick them up, and they fall asleep right in your arms. What did they need? They just wanted human touch, right? They just wanted to be around someone. Lots of times you even still see this in adults wanting companionship. Maybe you live by yourself. A lot of people have pets for companionship. A dog is a wonderful companion. Some people have cats. A dog is a wonderful companion. I don't know why you have a cat, but some people like cats. For companionship. Just want somebody to talk to. Just want somebody there. You know, whether you have a dog or a cat. You know, I had a dog before I got married. I was a single guy. What happens with a dog? You sit down, it sits right under your feet. You will trip on a dog. Cats do that thing where they shed hair all over you. But they get close to you. That's still the point. All mammals like companionship, right? We want to be around other mammals. There are some Bible characters who also suffered from loneliness. Didn't feel like they had companions. I want to think about a few. Now, we've talked about Elijah several the last few weeks, and he would be a great one. We know he was in that cave feeling mighty alone, but I was thinking about Jeremiah. Jeremiah chapter 16 and verse 2, God tells him, "You shall not take a wife for yourself, nor sons or daughters in this place." Keep going down in that chapter now, verse 5, and the Lord says, "Do not enter into a house of mourning." Verse 8, he says, "Moreover, you shall not go into a house of feasting." He doesn't have any family. If it's an occasion where everybody is sad, he's not supposed to join in on that. If it's an occasion where everybody's happy, he's not supposed to join in on that. What we all plan to do tomorrow, not Jeremiah. Let's all get together with family. He doesn't have one. And feast and have a good time and be thankful. Not him. Think he was lonely? Chapter 20, verse 7, he says, "I have become a laughingstock all day long. Everybody mocks me." A lot of that was for his message. Some of that was probably for his lifestyle. I'm trying to think in the Old Testament if I ever remember reading the word bachelor. I don't. You think he was ridiculed for choosing to be alone? Certainly he was lonely. What about David? We know David had family. He had loved ones. Psalm 142 and verse 44 says, "Look to the right and see, there is no one who regards me favorably. There is no escape for me. No one cares for my soul." Sounds like he's lonely, doesn't it? Is it David who also wrote Psalm 102 and verse 6 where he says, "I have become like a solitary bird on a housetop"? He's like, "I'm by myself. I'm lonely." Paul took the gospel all over the known world at the time. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 16, he says, "At my first defense, no one supported me, but all deserted me." All deserted me. Isn't that what happened to Jesus also? John chapter 6 and verse 66, Jesus has just fed 5,000 people. He just gave them all a free meal. And now I want to talk to you about eternal life. Here's what happens in verse 66. "As a result of this, many of his disciples left and would no longer walk with him. So Jesus said to the 12, do you want to leave also?" Does he feel alone? You know, you start chapter 7 and in verse 5 it says, not even his brothers believed. Was he lonely? I think he probably was. I think he probably felt alone at times. Loneliness can affect anyone. And you don't have to be alone to feel lonely. We talked about some of these people. They had friends, they had family, and yet they probably still had moments where they felt alone. And it can happen to any one of us. There are so many ways to connect right now. You know, I mentioned my family. Some of them's not going to be there tomorrow. And one of the other family members suggested, maybe we could all FaceTime. You know, we'll pull up the tablet and we'll all talk to each other and FaceTime since we can't be together. That's great. It's not the same though, is it? It's not the same as sitting down with them and having a meal together. So even though we have all these outlets and all these ways to connect, we might still feel alone. And a person maybe who's by themselves, even though they have ways to connect with their friends or their family or wherever, you know, a person might be, they still might feel alone. Now, it's important to remember, sometimes our feelings can lie to us. Sometimes just because we feel a certain way doesn't mean it's actually so. Jeremiah chapter 17 and verse 9 says, "The heart is more deceitful than all else." Just because we feel a certain way doesn't mean we are that way. And just because we might feel alone doesn't mean that we are alone. Three things I would like for us to consider tonight. and the lesson will be yours. The first, God is always with us. Now, it may seem simple to say, well, God is always with us because God is everywhere. But God is always with us because God is everywhere. Jeremiah chapter 23 and verse 24, Lord, ask a question. Can a person hide himself in hiding places so that I do not see him? God says, I fill the heavens, I fill the earth, I'm everywhere. Can a person hide from me? Can a person be separated from me? Acts chapter 17, there Paul says, he's not far from each of us. He's not far from each of us. No matter where you are, no matter where I am, God is there. So God is always with us. Now let's go back to Paul's statement that I referenced earlier. There where he said, no one supported me, but all deserted me. That's 2 Timothy 4:16. Now verse 17, but the Lord stood with me and strengthened me. The Lord stood with me and strengthened me. God gave Paul strength in his moment of loneliness. So what does it mean to say God is always with us? When we say that, what do we mean by that? Does that mean that God's going to manifest himself in some, you know, miraculous way, like, you know, things weren't going so great and then I was lonely and then boom, God showed up and everything changed? Is that what it means to say that God is with us? I want us to think about Joseph for just a second. You may want to check this in your translation. Genesis chapter 39, we're going to read the first five verses. I have the New American Standard on the overhead. And starting there in verse 1, now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an Egyptian officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the bodyguard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. Verse 2, and the Lord was with Joseph, so he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. Now his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did prosper in his hand. Verse 4, so Joseph found favor in his sight and became his personal servant, and he made him overseer over his house and put him in charge of all that he owned. It came about that from that time he made him overseer in his house and over all that he owned. The Lord blessed the Egyptian's house on account of Joseph. So the Lord's blessing was upon all that he owned in the house and in the field. Now there's five times in five verses where we see that the Lord is with Joseph. But with him where? Safely back home with his dad? With his brothers apologizing for what they had done? No. No, he's a slave in this man's house. And yet, even going through this, the Lord is with him. God is always with. This is the same God who tells us in Isaiah 21 and verse 10, do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be afraid, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will also help you. I will also uphold you with my righteous right hand. What does it mean when we say, God is with me? It means that I don't have to be afraid. I don't have to be afraid no matter what the situation is. God will take care of me. Now, things may not be going exactly like I want them to go, but no matter how bad it gets, God is with me and God will take care of me. And for those who might be lonely, I am not alone. God is with me. If God is not present in my life, it's because I've moved away from Him and not the other way around. The second thing we need to remember is that a social distance, if you will, can be useful. These moments alone are a great time to improve the lines of communication with God. Let God talk to me, and me talk to God. Open His Word and go to Him in prayer. That's a great opportunity when we're alone to do just exactly that. The quiet solitude promotes prayer and meditation and study and self-reflection. And Jesus did it. You know, if you look at Matthew chapter 14 and verse 23, He went up on the mountain by Himself to pray. The verse concludes, He was there alone. He used this moment to go away by Himself to pray. And it must be something He often did. Luke chapter 5 and verse 16, but Jesus Himself would often slip away to the wilderness and pray. Slip away from what? From everything, from everybody, to be alone, to be with His Father. If it was something He did, shouldn't I do it? In fact, even He advised me to do it. Doesn't He say that? Matthew chapter 6 and verse 6, go into your inner room, close your door, and pray to your Father who is in secret, who sees what is done in secret. This was something that Jesus, the Son of God, needed and advised me to do also. So certainly this is something we can do when we have a moment of quiet to ourselves. It's also a great opportunity to think about God's Word. Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 6 says, "These words which I'm commanding you today shall be on your heart, and you shall repeat them diligently to your sons and speak of them when you sit in your house, when you walk on the road, when you lie down, and when you get up." When you walk on the road, thankfully we don't have to walk on the road. We have all got nice automobiles. Do we ever listen to God's Word? You know, I tried something this year to see what would happen. I have about a 10 to 12 minute drive every morning from my house to meet Matt. And then, of course, 10 to 12 minutes on the way home in the evening by myself. And I got one of those little Bluetooth speakers for about, I don't know, $18 at Walmart. It's got a suction cup on it and stuck it on the window. And, you know, you can see it on the window of my Jeep. And on the way to work in the morning, I started on January 3rd at Genesis chapter 1. And I thought, well, I'll just listen while I'm riding in the car these moments by myself. And on September 20th, I finished the Bible. 20 minutes a day, just 10 minutes one way, 10 minutes another way. This is a great moment when we're by ourselves to let God talk to us. It's funny when you look around the world how many people think God is talking to them. Like they're looking for, you know, this or that happened and I'm pretty sure that was God talking to me. Let's take all the doubt out of it. Open His Word and let Him talk to us. What does He have to say? And I can't tell you how many times that something happened at work or I have something on my mind and I'm heading home and I'm listening and the passage that's playing is the exact thing that I need. And that is God talking to me because it's His Word. Maybe we need to make God a travel companion. These quiet moments alone. An opportunity for Him to talk to us. It's an opportunity to have a little bit of self-reflection. You know, we all know the story of the prodigal son. Goes to his dad. "Dad, I want my part of the inheritance. I'm out of here." He goes, he wastes all the money. Picking up now in Luke 15 and verse 14. "Now when he had spent everything, a severe famine occurred in that country, and he began doing without. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, and he sent him into the field to feed the pigs." What happens in verse 16? He finds himself wanting to eat what the pigs have. And verse 16 concludes this way, "And no one was giving him anything. He has separated himself from the people who care about him. The people who do not care about him have separated themselves from him. He is completely alone." Verse 17 starts, "He came to his senses." You know what he needed? He needed that time alone. To really think about, man, what direction is my life headed? I'm sitting here wanting the food that the pigs are eating. I got to change. Something has got to change. When we have these quiet moments, maybe it's a good time for a little bit of self-reflection. And the third and final thing is, we need to love and to be loved. You know, one thing that we can all take away from 2020, I think, is that we should all appreciate more what we have. You know, I can't tell you how many people I've heard say, "I'm looking forward to this going back to normal." Maybe we didn't appreciate the normal that we had before all this happened, but I'm looking forward to going back to this, looking forward to, you know, filling the seats in the auditorium again and those kind of things. Maybe we need to appreciate what we have and think about that. You know, the prodigal son, when he's sitting there looking at the pig food, starts to think about what he had. And he doesn't say, "I want that back." He said, "Man, I'll go back as a servant. I just want a portion of that back." Maybe we need to be grateful for the things that we actually have. You know, the problem with being alone is when we should be thinking about others and what we can do for them. When we're by ourselves, we just think about ourselves in kind of a selfish way, don't we? Galatians chapter 6 and verse 2 says, "Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law." Bear one another's burden. We don't really do that when we're by ourselves, do we? Maybe you do a better job of it than I do. By myself, I kind of think about myself. Well, I hate this is going this way, or I hate that's going that way. It's kind of a selfish pity party. What about what happened with Job? Think about that for just a minute. Job lost everything a person could not want to lose, right? And as he's thinking about lamenting over all the things that happened, Job 19 and verse 14, what he also says, "And my close friends have forgotten me." My friends have forgotten me. Do you think there's anybody who feels like they're forgotten this year? You know, maybe we've all kind of been consumed, I certainly have myself, with the things that have been going on and how it's affecting me, and maybe I've forgotten about some of my friends, some of my brethren, and some of the things they're going through. You know, when we get sent home, and we have to socially distance or, you know, shelter in place or whatever the terms are you just ready to get out of the house? You know, it's kind of like when, you know, every fourth or fifth year when we have one of those big snows and we're all snowed in, and about the third day, it's like, hey, you ready to test the roads? Let's see where we can go. I'm ready to get out of the house. I'm ready to go do something. You know, that's just a taste what we're getting of what some people deal with all the time. That shut-in list that scrolls on the overhead, they deal with that all the time. Do you think they feel forgotten this year? You know, when I'm kind of having a pity party for myself that, man, I don't like being shut in. I'm ready to get out. I don't like all this stuff. Not going to restaurants and everything. You think that's how they feel? Maybe I should be a little more aware of that. Acts chapter 2, we have there the early church. And in verse 44 it says, all the believers were together and had all things in common. The great challenge of this year is we haven't been able to be together. You know, no potlucks, no Bible classes at somebody's house, not even going out to restaurants and stuff like that. It's been difficult. You know, I got a chance to spend a little bit of time with Mike the other day. And I came up to the building. I was studying. He was up over here studying. That was kind of a funny story because I called him and said, where are you? And he said, I'm at the building. I said, I'm at the building. I said, I'm back here in the back. He said, I'm in my office. He said, I won't tell if you won't tell. I guess I just told. Sorry about that. So he comes out, and I sit down over here about where Hollis is, and he sits down over here about where Jackie Gooch is. And it's just the two of us in the auditorium, and we sat and talked for, I don't know, maybe an hour. That was so nice. To just sit and talk to him. Like, he's been here almost a year, and I still feel like I hardly know him. He probably feels the same way. You know, it's probably a challenge to move to a congregation and you can't go visit the wayward because you can't go to their house, and you can't go to the shut-in because you might make them further sick. And man, what a challenge. Isn't that kind of been the challenge of this year? We can't connect. We can't be together. And yet, we do still have a lot in common, just like that early church did. Maybe we don't get the chance to do it together, but we have a lot in common, and we have a lot in common with people of the world right now. I will ask this question, is this a time when the church has been weakened? Well, if we only go by whatever the numbers are posted on the board, we would all go, yeah, the church has been weakened. I would ask, is this an opportunity for the church to be strengthened? Because we're all going through the same thing. We have a lot in common. There are a lot of people who are lonely. Can I connect with that person so that when this is over, they will be here too? Are we weakened, or is this an opportunity for us? John chapter 13 and verse 35, Jesus says, by this all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. I hope that we always teach the truth. I hope that we're always known as a group of people who teach the truth. But Jesus says, people will know you're